Page Fright is recorded on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. These territories were stolen, and they are now the space where I inhabit and live. But the guests you're hearing on this podcast often come from different territories across what is now known as Canada. I encourage our guests, and I encourage you as well, listening at home, to take a moment to consider the territory you're on, its history, and how you might have come to belong here. Welcome back to Page Fright. My name is Andrew French. I'm on Instagram at Andrew W. French, and this, of course, is the world's only podcast that I host. I am excited, as always, to be back behind the microphone. December of 2023, our last episode, probably, of 2023. And it's one I've been looking forward to for quite a while. I've been sitting on this interview for about a month, and I'm just excited to share it with you, because regardless of whether or not the interview is any good, which I hope it is, I hope when you listen, you go, Andrew did a great job on that one, because I know my guest did, but I don't know about me ever, right? So who knows? But regardless of whether or not the interview is any good, the writer that we're talking to today and the writing that we're talking about today really blows me away. So I'm super excited to share today's interview with Kit Roffey. Kit is a writer whose work I encountered for the first time a year or two ago, when they read with me at an event in London, Ontario. It was great, and seeing them read, hearing them read, really blew me away. I think about that reading a lot in terms of, like, the impact that you can have on somebody physically in a room at a reading, and it's something that I aspire to. Whether or not Kit knows that, I don't know, but I think about it a lot, and there's a fun reveal about that reading in this episode that I won't spoil for you. But all this to say, Kit is a really great writer. They've just put out their first chapbook. It's called Civilian of Dirt. Links below. It's out with 845 Press, and I'm a big fan. And the reason I'm such a big fan of Kit's work is not just because they can read it really well, but because they write it really well, too. And what I mean about that specifically is that, you know, there's a lot of poets who, like, it takes a whole poem to get the meaning out. It takes a whole poem to get that hit at the end of meaning and feeling that you're really looking for as a reader. And it's really hard to compress that into smaller spaces. So Kit not only does that in short poems in this collection, but also does it in each line. Like, seriously, it feels like each line. They're very, very, very good at that. And it's something I'm jealous of, because I often find I'm writing a poem and I'll sacrifice a line and be like, this doesn't have the meaning, but the next one will. And Kit just, it seems, doesn't do that. So Kit, if you're listening to this, you got to teach me how to do that. Regardless, if you're listening to this as a listener, I suggest you tune in, because Kit's got some great poems here. We're going to talk about them. I make the mistake of thinking that Kit organizes readings because I saw them read once. That's not the case. They don't organize readings. They're just good at them. And we talk about all sorts of different things in this interview. So it's great to catch up with Kit for this one, to introduce you to them and their first collection of poetry, Civilian of Dirt. Let's get into their bio and then into the interview. So to tell you a bit about Kit, they are a queer writer. They hold a BA in English and Cultural Studies from Huron at Western University. Their work has appeared in Vallum, Event, Exister, and Grain, among others. Their first collection of poetry, Civilian of Dirt, is out now with 845 Press. They can be found on Instagram at poetry_kit, and are always happy to talk writing or debate over the best pen brands, boy genius songs, and coffee orders. Here I am chatting with Kit Roffey. We are back with another episode of Page Fright. I am thrilled to have today's guest on the show, because I've wanted to have them on the show for a very long time. And they've just released a chapbook. It's called Civilian of Dirt. It's out now with 845 Press. Kit Roffey is here. Kit, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm so good. I just took a little midday nap on a Friday, which is a total luxury. So I am more than energized and ready to talk about poetry. I'm so stoked to talk about your chapbook. There are some really cool poems in here. And overall, it's just an awesome little project. But before we get into it, before we start talking about it, for people that might not have read your work before, could I get you to share a poem with us?
Yeah. One second, let me find it.
Okay.
I swear I like sticky tabbed everything
Oh,
and like wrote down the number in the order I wanted to read them. I'm so organized.
you know what, though? I'm going to leave this in because that's an important tip for writers. I feel like you should sticky tab your readings, know where you're going to go so that you can be as organized as Kit and ready to go.
Okay. So this poem is called Black Mold, New Bleach 2023. One, tell you about today. The shower I took the way short hair is easier to wash. How I can't ghost long strands tangled like dewdrop webs. Steam so hot it raided the bedroom. Renewed and so alive I could fissure a bone. Rupture a tendon. Two, thinking about sore skin, the marks left on my shoulders, flesh settling out of the bounds of rough seams, how I contort into myself, position just right, ability to reach around my rib cage, elbow extending. Three, careful with myself in the way I call my own name. The way the moon calls it back to me, the way my father can't. Four, ask the overhead sphere how to press a tie-dye tab of certainty without it dissolving under my tongue, how not to bleed when I bite my lip, holding hope, puffed cheeks.
Oof. Okay, I am so excited to talk about this poem and this chapbook. One of the, I think it was part three. Yes, part three I had flagged there as a favorite page of the book. So I'm very excited that you read that. Amazing. So tell me, Kit, a little bit about this chapbook. It's your first chapbook. It's out with 845, as I said. What can readers expect when they grab a copy of this?
It's not a long read.
Okay.
I like dispersed the words over the pages fairly broadly. So there's some pages that have like one very short stanza on them. So you can get through it pretty fast. Or maybe I just
Okay.
got through it really fast because I wrote it and knew all the poems, most of them. I did forget that I included one in it when I picked it up and I was like, oh, that's in there.
That's a
But
nice little surprise.
it was a
I
nice
won't
little
ask you
surprise.
I won't ask you to reveal which one that was, but I am curious, maybe off mic. Okay, it's an efficient, quick read. We love that. What are some of the themes in the chapbook? What are we talking about in here?
I talked a lot, I think, just about like memory in general, and I'm non-binary, so kind of it's interspersed with like me transitioning, and that was in the line like the way the moon calls my name, the way my father can't, because my
Right.
dad had a hard time at first calling me my new name. So there's a lot of that in it, and yeah, eventually just about kind of finding myself and feeling a little bit more steady in myself.
Yeah, and a lot of these poems are okay, so you've already touched on a couple things that I had written down questions about. I'm going to start with memory because you mentioned that memory is a big theme in here. You wrote, and this is the only quote I'm going to bring out for you in this interview because it's the only one I wrote down, but you wrote in the chat book that memory will brush my hair, rub my back, sing me to sleep. And I wanted to ask you a little bit more about how memory figures into your writing because it's prominent in most of these poems.
So I think that memory is, I'm not good at writing poems out of like thin air. I usually base them on some sort of memory, and I think writing is one of the ways that I deal with my past, and like past memories that I don't really know how to take apart yet. So often I'll be writing something, and then like days later, I'll realize that it's pretty true. Like I wrote about this experience, and then it was like, oh yeah, I did feel that way about this experience, even though I wasn't fully sure about it when I was writing the poem.
Interesting. So I have talked to a lot of people about memory on this show, and one of the things that comes up when you're talking about that, and I'm curious to hear your perspective on this. I talked to Jen Suk Fong Lee, God knows how many episodes ago. It feels like a lifetime, but it probably wasn't that long. And we were talking about memory, and I believe it was her who told me that often you need sort of a period between something happening and you writing about it in order for things to come to light. And I found that very true in my own practice, but I've also found, similar to kind of what you're saying, or what I think you're saying, which is that sometimes, it doesn't take a long time after something happens for you to start writing about it and come to realizations. I find writing to be very, like, I don't know, sometimes it's therapeutic, sometimes it's incredibly stressful, as you know. I hope it's mostly therapeutic for you. For me, it's often the other way. But I find that, like, coming to these realizations and analyzing things from your past can be incredibly useful. Like, that's what really draws me to writing. Do you feel like there has to be that sort of buffer period that Jen and I were talking about, where you do need some space away from an event before you can write about it? Or are you happy to just, like, go home as soon as it happens and jump into a journal?
I tend to like go right into it after something happens.
Interesting.
And yeah, like I wrote a poem recently about like a dream I had, as like cliche as that sounds, or not a dream, but I wasn't fully sober and I was like half asleep, you know, when you're in that state and you,
Okay.
yeah, are you following me?
I'm following you, yes.
Okay, sorry. But I wrote a poem about something that had happened like the night before. So I tend to like just jump right into things. And then those poems that I write right after events usually end up changing quite a bit as my perspective changes. But yeah, I don't think I personally need that buffer.
Interesting. Yeah, I feel somewhat envious. I also feel like that state you're describing of not being asleep but having a half dream, half awake state is a perfect space for poetry. That sounds like perfect poetry fodder. So I feel like you're accessing the right stuff. That sounds pretty good. So memory though is obviously really important in this chapbook, and I know that there are, like you said, some shorter pieces in here, so some shorter pages and so on. But here's the thing: is I've tried to write short poems. Okay, I'm not good at it. I need space to make them work. And I'm jealous of people like you who seem to be able to just, like, crack one out in like 5 lines and have it mean something really impactful. So I am wondering what you think makes a good short poem, and do you write your short poems like differently from longer pieces, or is it a similar process?
I don't usually set out to write short poems. I usually write like kind of obscenely long poems and then
Okay.
edit them down a ton because there's a whole bunch of words and like repetition that isn't there to, like as a literary device, just like I accidentally say the same thing 5 times. So a lot of it is just editing stuff down until it feels right. And by the time it feels right, sometimes it's like, 10 lines of poem and then it's done. But I've been trying to, for a contest that's coming up with the League of Canadian Poets, they have one where you have to like write a poem and it has to be 200 characters or less.
Oh, wow.
So I've really had to like approach writing differently to try to get anything out that's 200 characters or less.
Yeah, no kidding. I wonder if I've ever written a poem that's, well, I'm sure I have. I wonder if I've ever published a poem that's 200 characters or less, because that's a tall order. I don't know that I could cram much into that space. I always find that difficult, and this is why a lot of my poems are like around a page or at least a page, is because I feel like for the poems that I write in the poems that I really appreciate, in the style that I write, often there's something set up at the start that's continuous throughout and comes up at the end. And you just don't have space for that sort of structure in a shorter poem, which is why I'm always blown away when I read something like your chapbook and there are things that are so impactful in these short poems. One thing that I know comes up a lot in this chapbook is like the reading that you gave us to start this episode off, like numbered sections to poems. So I was going to ask you too how you decide to divide things up into sections like that.
I think a lot of it, well, I used to divide things up into sections a lot more, and then I got comments that were like, there's absolutely no reason why this has to be like divided up into sections. So I'm a lot more choosy with it now instead of just doing it like at random. But it's usually because I have kind of a general thread that would go through the whole poem. But if I divided it up into stanzas instead of sections, it would just be a little bit too disjointed. So I feel like
Interesting.
sectioning things off kind of allows you to get away with a bit more when it comes to form and also like having continuity between stanzas.
Interesting. So you're thinking that it brings more continuity if you break it into sections.
Because there's poems where it's like this wouldn't make sense if it was just laid out all in stanzas with no like numbered sections. But when you break it into sections, there's a bit more room for that discontinuity between lines and stanzas and everything.
Interesting. Okay, so maybe this is what I got to do is play around with this more. I think I have written a very small number of poems with sections because I actually received very similar feedback to what you did, in terms of sections, in that like I would write section poems and people would tell me that this doesn't need to be in sections. This could all function as one thing. And I'd be like, oh, okay, I'll just never do that again. But you are brave enough to do it again and to publish these poems. And it works really well in this chapbook. And that continuity is certainly there between a lot of these stanzas and sections for these poems, in a way that allows them to speak to each other too. I always find that interesting how poems, when you're putting a chapbook together, do speak to each other, or a full-length book together, I'm sure, just based on their placement in the book. And so it's the same thing when you have sections in a poem. Obviously, moving them around and playing with that is super important. We're just about time for me to bring in a question for you from our last episode's guest. So this one, Kit, this requires me to explain a little bit to you, I think.
Okay.
So my last guest was Chris Johnson. I haven't put this episode out yet. I really need to. It'll probably come out in the next couple of days. But so Chris was telling us that he will sometimes in readings read another person's poem as part of his reading. Like he'll slide in, someone else's poem and in amidst like four of his own, for example. So Chris is wondering what you think about reading someone else's poem in a public forum.
Oh, that's interesting. I had never thought to do that before. I mean, I love that it's a way to support other writers and get their names out, especially if they're smaller writers that you love. If it's, a reading you're at, say, hey, I actually love this poem by this person. But I feel like it really depends on who wrote the poem, if that makes sense. Like if it's part of this like collective consciousness and it's everyone's poem, the same way that like I don't know, like a T.S. Eliot poem would be, compared to if it's some smaller author who is, still alive and has recently written these poems and they're not part of this general like collective knowledge that a lot of people share about poetry. So I think it really depends for me. I think it's interesting the idea of taking someone else's poem and you can kind of make it yours just in the way that like you read it, and like your tone inflections and all of that. But yeah, I think I'm a little bit undecided on that.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fair. I honestly, I've had longer than you, obviously, to think about this because I interviewed Chris a couple weeks ago. But I am still undecided as well. I'm like, I don't know. Could I do that at a reading? But then we don't hesitate necessarily as much to, use a couple lines from another poem at the start of our own, before our poem begins, or to do some glossing and include lines from other poets, in our own writing and modify them even if we need. So it is interesting how, I don't know, at first when Chris brought this up, I was kind of like, that sounds wild to me that people are doing that. But what a cool idea. And then I had the same response that you had, which was, if you're foregrounding somebody else's work, and giving them that space, I think that's awesome. It's just a matter of, yeah, like the length of it for some reason to me matters. Because if I'm writing a little epigraph at the start of a poem, it feels very different from, reading a whole poem aloud. But it did give me the idea. I was thinking about would I do this? And I think the way I would do it if I were to do it would be to open a reading with somebody else's poem and use it like this sort of verbal epigraph to sort of introduce my own writing if that somehow contextualized the poems I was going to be reading. But that would be a very specific situation. I don't know. Chris, you're crazy. I don't know. I don't know how this works out. But yeah. So that was Chris's question for you. And it brings me to a question for you because I have had the luxury. We live in very different areas of the country. I'm on the West Coast. You are not on the West Coast. And but we went to the same college. We went to Huron College at Western University. So shout out to anybody from Huron who might be listening. And I was back there a couple of years ago now. Oh my God, a couple of years ago now. And I did a reading and you came and you read, and I was lucky enough to see you read and listen to you read. And I was just blown away by your writing and the way that you delivered your readings. And so I wanted to ask you what you think makes a good reading as well.
Okay, so I was told this by a friend who told me to, like, the first reading I did, which I think was the one with you, like, ever.
That was your first reading?
I'm pretty sure that was my first public reading, yeah.
Oh my God. Okay.
But he told me to visualize the words as I was saying them. So if your poem has a line about a green leaf on a wet branch, visualize that green leaf on the wet branch and it will change the way that you say the words. So I think a good reading involves not just looking at the words on the page and like reciting them, but actually thinking about what you're reading and visualizing what you're reading. And then that will kind of change the way that you talk.
Yeah, that is a really thoughtful way of doing it. I haven't heard that tip before. I am also just reeling from hearing the news that that was your first reading because I remember being blown away. Yeah, this is crazy. But that is such a good tip to have. And I feel like I don't know if you I know you go to a lot of readings because you organize some readings and you're part of many groups in London, Ontario that do this. But I have come across the poet voice at too many readings. And it often comes up on this show too, where we all have that voice that sounds pretty similar to each other, where we're using the same intonation, and it's often a very calming voice at least. But it means that there's little left to the writer to interpret their own writing in their reading at times. And this is one of the things that drew me initially to slam poetry, which is where I started really to write anything. And what I loved about it was the emphasis that people could put on things to change the meaning and the way that rhythm and sound worked in that way. And I find now writing page poetry that often those things go to the back of my mind. They're not front of mind. And I know that the writers who do have those things front of mind are the ones who are really blowing things out of the water and are fantastic. And I wish I was there, but they go to the back of my mind. And I feel like people who aren't focusing in on their readings and how they're going to read things, potentially visualizing that green leaf on a wet branch, whatever it might be, you're missing out on an opportunity to really change the way your work is read and heard and deliver it in such a customized way. I just find that so valuable and interesting. That's one of the things I love about going to readings is hearing how people use different inflections and intonations to shift the way that their poems mean. And that's something so powerful. I don't know. Do you what has your experience been like going to readings too? Because as I said, I know you've worked in organizing some readings as well. What has your experience been, and what has like stood out to you as like pleasant or ideal that you see other writers do in their readings?
I actually haven't been to a ton of readings.
Oh,
I don't know who told you I organized readings.
I just made that up.
Yeah, you just made that up. It sounds like
Okay.
a great thing to have on my CV, but I do not have the organizational skills.
Really? Okay. Why? I don't know why I thought that. Okay, so that's gonna make me sound crazy, but that's okay. I just assumed you did. I feel like I thought you'd okay, whatever. It doesn't matter. But okay, so scratch my question then. We'll move on. Let's you know what we'll do? We'll reset a little bit with a reading. Why don't we reset with a reading?
Okay.
Could I get you to read another poem for us from the chapbook?
Yes, I will flip to sticky note number two.
Amazing.
Okay. This poem's called Something Steady, Prepubescent Past. I know how to twist. I don't want to be this. Feet pushing against the maple to swing. Impact of my body weight when calluses bleed, bark scraped. I'm a civilian of dirt when I can't make it to the next branch. Knees to match palms. I'm ground down, too familiar, this you, me, you, and petering out. I'll say no to rooftops and chimneys. Won't try to find new heights. Carve nothing into the tree. My initials will change with time, and I can't grasp permanence now that I can support my own neck.
So glad you read this poem. Full disclosure, my favorite poem in the chapbook, just personally. So I'm so stoked that you read this. It also has the title of your chapbook, Civilian of Dirt, which is, by the way, such a fantastic title. I'm so thrilled that that ended up being the title of this collection because it is so strong and it just works so well. And also, the listeners won't know this if you haven't looked at it, but the cover of this chapbook is so cool. I really like the illustration. I know because I also published with 845 way back when that there isn't a ton of like need for you to get involved in the cover page. I don't know if you did, but they kind of just do it and it's awesome because you get to see how somebody else interprets your work and they knocked it out of the park with this one. It looks so cool. I'm just gonna flip and see who did your cover so that I can tell you. Give them some credit. Rachel Tersh. Rachel Tersh, who's also your no,
She
sorry,
was the
Celia
editor.
Abler.
Yes.
Sile, okay, so I've had them on the podcast. That's fantastic. Okay, amazing. They're still doing it. That's great. Knocked it out of the park. Well done. So I'm so glad that you read this poem. And I wanted to ask you, I totally forgot. I was going to ask you as the first question, so we'll jump back to it. In your book, we have titles listed in the contents, and then every title has an additional bit on it on the actual page. So, Kit, what's going on there? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
So I think the full titles might have just been too long to list in the table of contents.
Okay.
So, because I flipped open the book and I was like, oh, the full title's not there. But yeah, I think it started out with like a couple titles having like the first little bit, then the second bit, which is like words all smushed together. And then
Right.
I just did it for everything.
Hey. It's an interesting device. And honestly, I thought it was intentional. I was like, there's something going on here that is very powerful, and I can't quite put my finger on what it is. So that's very fun to know that that's what was going on. A little peek behind the screen. But it does work really well. And I really like the two parts to the titles. So the second part of the titles are they all dated? Is that right? No,
I
not all
could,
of them are dated. I'm flipping
yeah.
through. Yeah. So, okay, so tell me a little bit about splitting up the title in this way then and adding that second bit.
So I haven't really thought about it, honestly. I just kind of did it and I was like, this looks fine. But
Interesting.
I think the first part was kind of the title that I had for some of them already, like poems that I had written earlier. And then I think I just wanted to give some context to some of the poems. So, like, prepubescent past kind of tells you that I'm not an adult. It's not like from a current point of view. Or, like, 2006 to present is the press on earring poem, and it's how long a press on earring has been in my parents' dryer because they've had that dryer forever. I think I just really
Interesting.
wanted to give some context.
Yeah, very, very cool. Okay, so that helps. That's really interesting to hear about too. I often wonder, I am one of the people who's in the habit of using a line from a poem to title that poem. That's just the go-to when I can't think of anything. And you'll notice if you look at my work, I do that a lot because, as I said, I can't think of anything. So it comes up quite often, but I worry sometimes that if I do give titles that are different from the lines from the poem, sometimes they'll be out of context or they'll throw the reader in a different direction or something. So it's interesting to see you do this. And I think it's actually a really useful idea. Not saying I'm going to steal it, but I might like copy it a little bit in some drafts and see what happens. But yeah, so I really love the titling in this chat book, the titling of this chat book, all of those things. One thing I wanted to ask you about too, so I mentioned we went to the same college. You and I had the same professors, probably pretty much exactly, because it's a very small college. So similar group of people that influenced our writing in that way. I wanted to ask, when you were in school, because you did an undergrad in English, when you were in school and doing this, what were some of the things you were reading that stood out to you and maybe influenced your writing in this chapbook?
Oh God, I was a very sporadic reader. I didn't do much reading, but the one thing I would always read was Sarah Kane plays. And I read Psychosis, I think it's 4.48, and by Sarah Kane. And I think that's just influenced my writing a lot because it reminded me of the way that I wrote in my notes app when I was a teenager. And it just kind of like encouraged me to get to more of an authentic way of expressing myself and not doing what I thought was right or what I thought was like proper form or whatever, and just kind of like putting it all out there.
I love that. That is very, very cool. I think I've read maybe a Sarah Kane play, maybe. So we don't unfortunately share that piece of literature, but maybe we will. Maybe I'll have to do some looking. But I love this idea because I feel like, I don't know, I get the sense that this isn't the case for you, but we're delving into my issues now. One of the issues I have is that as I'm writing things, sometimes I will start erasing and reorganizing. And what ends up happening is that I don't get everything out on the page. And so I am on this endless quest, it seems, to find a writing style where I feel comfortable just dumping things on the page and then going back and playing with them. Because the first draft is almost never the final draft, and I know that, but the first draft doesn't need to be edited itself while being written, 40 times in my journal. So I've been having trouble with that. But are you somebody who edits while they write, or are you very much like get it on the page and come back later and then organize things?
I usually get it all out on the page and then I come back later just because I know that there's going to be little lines that like are words that I pick out that don't make it into the final version of the poem, but I will use for other poems just because I really like a certain word or I really like a certain combination of a few words. So I
Yeah,
like to
having
have it all.
those.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. Having those like spare phrases is often very helpful when you're like starting a new poem too, just to have a jumping off point. I don't know. I find that super helpful. I was gonna ask you too, this is unrelated to what we're talking about, so sorry for the hard pivot, but I know you also you draw as well, right? And are active in like other art forms. So I was gonna ask how you came to poetry. As a writing form, it sounds like there was a notes app as a teenager that was particularly helpful. So how you came to poetry and how you view this as different from the other art forms you engage in.
I think I go through phases with different art forms. Like for a few months, I'll be really into poetry, and then I won't write for months and months because all I'm doing is like crocheting 20,000 tiny little stars. But I don't really know how I came to poetry. I think a lot of it is I had a class at Huron that was a creative writing class, and it wasn't poetry at all. It was all short fiction. But I got to learn some rules, and then I started applying those rules in like the poetic form. It probably sounds really bad, but for a long time I only wrote poems when like submission deadlines were coming up for on-campus literary journals. So I wouldn't write at all. Then I'd like crack out two poems like 2 hours before midnight.
Damn. Honestly
And then,
impressive.
but I didn't get more into writing poetry until I won the Antler River Poetry Prize way back when. And then I was like, okay, I actually tried really hard to write a poem for once and spent more than an hour on it, and I really liked it. So I decided just to keep doing that.
Fantastic. I love that this is how you came into poetry. Listeners of this show will know that I had a similar experience in that I actually, apart from between my bachelor's and my master's, I took a poetry class with Kevin Spence, who's been on the show before. Apart from that, I've never taken a creative writing class. And I kind of just stumbled into writing because I really liked the stuff I was reading. And then I found a poetry course particularly inspiring. But I definitely, it wasn't something that I planned to come to. And I'm very grateful that I did because obviously it's allowed me to talk to a lot of other fantastic poets and do stuff like this. But I find it so interesting to hear how people come to it. And especially in this case where you're saying, you were starting out writing short fiction and then you were writing because of deadlines. I remember doing the same thing and like writing because I saw, on Submittable that there was like a deadline, or as you said, like an on-campus literary journal had a deadline or something. I would just try and crank something out. And honestly, looking back, not my favorite stuff that I've written, but definitely a valuable way to start playing with those things. And having a supportive environment to do that is so valuable.
Yeah, I definitely agree that, yeah, everyone comes to writing in their own way, and my way was just motivated by wanting to see my little name in print for that just was fun to me. And then I just got really into it as time went along.
I love it. I think it's a great way to come to it, and obviously it's working well because your chapbook is fantastic. Again, folks, you really need to check this one out. I know I do a lot of like full length books on this show, and so when I do chapbooks, like we did a chapbook last month with Chris Johnson, I suppose. We're talking about his chapbook and his series of chapbooks. He's got a bunch of them. But when I do chapbooks, it's often because they really stand out to me. This is one that is really, really, really cool, and I hope people check it out. That's my plug in the middle of the show, awkwardly, for people to buy your book. But while we're talking about things in the middle of the show, one thing I need right now in the middle is a question from you for my next episode's guest. So, Kit, do you have something I can ask my next guest without knowing who they're going to be?
I do, and I know exactly what you can ask me after I ask my question.
Fantastic.
So my question is, I also wrote it down on a sticky note. How do you separate the media you consume, so like the music you listen to and the books you read and the movies you watch and all of that, from your writing?
Ooh, this is a great question. Okay. So you likely know that I do the mean thing where I turn the question around now. So I'm going to ask you, Kit, how do you separate the media you consume, like music and books, et cetera, from your own writing?
I'm really bad at it.
Okay.
I am influenced a lot by the music I listen to, not in like big ways where I'm just copying down like whole chunks of lyrics and calling it a new poem, but in the way that like I'll hear a certain word. Like Civilian is the title of one of my favorite songs. And I just got really obsessed with the word civilian. So, because I love the song so much. So, I started including it in my writing just because it was on my mind a lot. So, I am bad at separating those two things, but I do try my best not to like directly copy. And a lot of the times that will involve like reading a poem multiple times, being like, oh no, did I accidentally copy something?
Right. Yeah. Okay. This is really interesting. I find so this is a very interesting way of looking at this question. I find it so interesting that your title comes partially from the title of a song you're obsessed with. That's fantastic. Love that. But I oh my gosh, yeah, I really love this. I often have a hard time differentiating between or keeping the lines firm between what I listen to or read and what ends up in my journals. I feel like it's really difficult sometimes to keep that a firm boundary. And I think in a lot of instances, you don't necessarily have to. Like you said, we're not out here copy pasting lyrics off of Google and calling it a poem, because they're obviously somebody else's work. But I think there's a lot to be said for like inspiration that comes from those things. Have you played around with writing using like music lyrics and stuff like that before and like incorporating them as lines into poetry?
I haven't, but that sounds
Ooh.
fun.
Yeah. So I have written many failed manuscripts, but one of them was all glossing, all glosses, and just like taking lines from other poets and songs and adding them randomly into poems that I was writing because I really liked the lines. And what ended up happening was my friend Chris Bailey, who has been on the show a long, long time ago. Hi, Chris, if you're listening. Chris told me that the poems and songs and media that I was using in my poetry were ways to write myself into the poem, but that they ended up not being necessary once I got there. So what ended up happening is now my writing practice often involves taking like, four lines from a Mary Oliver poem and chucking them down and then trying to fit them into a poem of my own, and then taking them out at the end. So if you're listening to this and you've been on the show too, I've probably done it with your poems. I play around with it all the time. So it's a lot of fun to do that sort of thing. And actually, Kit, I did it with one of your poems. Okay, wait, which one was it? I'm gonna flip. I gotta flip and find this. Roaming Skin, 2014 Dropout. I tried to use some of the lines from this. I don't know if it went anywhere, but it was the first time that I wrote in a while. I've been, as listeners of this show will know by now, going through a pretty hefty drought. But reading your chat book actually really got me back into writing again in a way that has been super, I don't know, valuable, therapeutic, just enjoyable. Because I know, like, I read versions of these poems that are in this chat book a long time ago. And seeing them printed now and seeing them in a different form in some cases is so cool. And it just made me want to write again. So picking up one of your poems and playing with that has been a fun way to get back into writing. And I've actually written some poems that I, this is shocking, actually like over the past like month or so or a couple weeks. So it's been very nice returning to that. So thank you for helping me get back to writing.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I really have enjoyed it, and it's taken a lot for me to get back to writing. I don't know if you go through these slumps. I'm sure you do. It sounds like you just end up crocheting stars when you do, but I think different people have different moments in life and times in life that get really busy. For me, it was like this summer was just a nightmare time with so much going on. And coming back to writing now has been very therapeutic, and I feel like your chapbook and your writing has been a big part of that. So I'm very grateful to have had a chance to read it and to be a part of its kind of coming together process too. It's so cool. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. We are reaching the end of our episode. It's very sad. We're gonna
Yeah,
have to stop talking soon. But before we take off, Kit, could I get you to read one last poem for us?
yes. Okay, so I'm gonna read the last poem in the chat book just because I think it like rounds things off nicely. It's called Opposing One Day. No amount of observation will let you peel apart the rind, paper cut stinging, juice dripping onto your sleeve, messy and sour, sweet, aching. I can't be dissected with a knife, unassured. Do I want to go under? Full of contradictions when I tell you I'm a stranger to myself, but I know the underside of my nail is raw. Perception is craving. Is the cavity I refuse to get filled? Is the way I round my spine, exhale without too much fuss and circumstance? You can't even tell if I'm breathing. Put your hand over my mouth to check for a gust of something warm and dispersed. I will hold life inside of me to prove something can be mine alone. Build a decent exit. Spell my shadow backwards. Eat something nourishing and round. Imperfect is your construction of my body, deceivingly full, eventually spitting out seeds. My past lives buried under an orange grove.
I will hold life inside of me to prove something can be mine alone is just an insanely great line. Thank you, Kit, for doing this and for reading that poem for us. For listeners, again, in case you haven't heard me, it's called Civilian of Dirt, this chapbook, and it's out with 845 Press. There will be a link below the description for this episode, so please go and take a look and grab a copy of Kit's chapbook. It's so fantastic, and I promise you won't regret it. Kit, thank you so much for your time. It's so great to chat again.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Of course. So there you have it. That was me chatting with Kit Roffey. Kit, just so great to chat. I always enjoy chatting with Kit, whether it be, a sit-down chat like this or just over text or whatever. It's great to talk about poetry, and to see them doing so well with their writing is just fantastic too, because this collection, guys, I really mean it. If you liked any of those poems, or even if you didn't, you should check it out. It's a great little chapbook, and it's definitely worth your time. As I said at the top, this is probably our last episode of 2023, so I'm hoping that everybody has a great holiday season. Hopefully, you get some time off work, some time to visit with some loved ones, and some time to yourself too, because that's just as valuable, of course. And I'll be back in the new year with more poetry, more writers, more bad questions, and I will see you then. For now, my name's Andrew French. I'm on Instagram at Andrew W. French, and this, of course, has been Page Fright.